From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm producer Megan Mack. Wherever you might be listening today, we hope you're warm and dry and safe. We know a lot of people out there have had trouble getting to work or getting around today, and that includes the host of Connections, Evan Dawson. So this is a first. Evan will be joining us in a moment from his home office, hosting by phone. First, I'll welcome our guest for the hour. You might have seen that just a few weeks ago, the Rochester Rhinos soccer team got a new owners. David and Wendy Dworkin are here to explain their plans for the franchise. David and Wendy, welcome to Connections.
Thank you for having us.
Hello.
And now I'll hand it off to our host. Evan is on the line. How are things looking out there?
This is so weird. this is so strange hosting a show from the home office. But no, we did the best we could, and I had a bit of a Twitter tantrum this morning, but I've calmed down. I know, you know, whether you're a private plow contractor or town government, it's tough. We just happen to be sort of at the bottom of a little hill, and we haven't seen much in the way of anything in terms of any help. So here I am. So I am so sorry. Megan, thanks for being there. And David and Wendy, this is a great honor and a privilege to talk to you. How are you guys?
Certainly I'm great, but I'll tell you what I say when something happens that just hasn't happened before. I like to say, at my age, I don't get a lot of firsts anymore. So this is a first for you. When you're young, you get a lot of firsts, your first everything. So, you know, as we get older, we don't get a lot of firsts. So here's your first.
This is going to be such a cheesy interlude, but let me tell you a true story about a first. When I was in college, the first paid writing job I ever had was for a now defunct website called MLSsoccer.com. And my brother and I wrote a column called Brotherly Love of the Game. We were both big football soccer fans growing up. And the very first column we wrote together, and I think this was 97, 98 maybe. It was called Rhino Rage Against the Machine, Why Rochester Deserves the Next Spot in MLS. And I had never been to Rochester. I'm a Cleveland native. I was in Ohio for school. But everybody was talking about this remarkable city, the passion the fan base had, that they were playing in a minor league baseball stadium and drawing 10, 11,000 fans a night. And it really captivated me. So for me, my history following the Rhinos goes back to even before I got to Rochester, and I'm sure that you guys are aiming to put Rochester back at a place where the attendance is that way, and that's what we're going to talk about this hour, is how we get there. But first, let me just ask to go back here. Are you, soccer fans? Are you football fans, as the purists like us would say?
Yes, I played soccer in high school. One small school recruited me to play soccer in college. And my parents made it clear to me that they were paying for my education, and that's what I was going to do. So, yes, love soccer. I mean, we love all sports in our family.
Wendy, same?
Yes, I've always liked sports. I played field hockey in high school, loved it, and I stay really active physically to this day, just not in professional sports, so to speak. My abilities don't go to that level.
Very good. Well, listeners, if you, like me, are stuck inside, can't really move around, you're going to enjoy the program from wherever you are, you can still call the program, and we'd love to hear from you about what you would like to see for the future of the Rhinos. And in fact, in less than, I think, a month, the Dworkins have made it clear they want to hear from the fans, too, in many different varieties here. They are already talking about the fan experience, about how to make things better, and how to bring more of us out to games, to events on a regular basis. So you can call the program just as you usually do, 844-295-TALK. It's toll-free, 844-295-8255, or 263-WXXI. If you are snowbound in Rochester, 263-9994. They're keeping me apprised of various feedback, and I see a lot of feedback already on Twitter, at Evan Dawson, so I'll be working in some of our audience feedback. But it's a great chance for you to speak directly to the new owners of the Rochester Rhinos. And I would love if David and Wendy could tell us a little story and see if I've got the details right. I know that you guys were driving back, I think, to Rochester from Toronto. David and Wendy are part owners in the Sacramento Kings. We'll get to that story in a moment. You guys were coming back from Toronto. Was this the December 20th game? Was that right?
Yes.
Yes, it was.
All right, so it's December 20th. The Kings play to Toronto. They go to the game. I think I read that you were there. You took your son. You're driving back.
Correct.
And somehow it came onto your radar that as NBA co-owners of a team, that maybe the soccer world needs you. And Rochester, even though they were coming off another league title, the fifth, they needed new ownership. And my guess is Wendy immediately said, we've got nothing to do. This would be a great little side project, and it's exactly what we want to do. Actually, Wendy, I heard that you were a little bit more of a skeptic, yes?
I'm just more cautious than David. We're very much alike. We work great together. We've been doing it for about 20, 21 years, but I'm just more cautious than he is. So he was all energized and good to go, and I had more questions to ask, but I'll let David take it from there, how it actually unfolded on the drive back from Toronto.
Go ahead, David.
I've always been a believer that things happen for a reason. And we were, as you said, driving home from Toronto. It was the Toronto-Sacramento Kings game, driving home. We get an email, or I get an email, that's the topic is Rochester Rhinos. And the body of the email just basically says, I got your name from so-and-so. You know, could you give me a call? I left you a message at your office as well, because I had an out-of-office voicemail. So I called him on the phone, and he said that he's from Sacramento. He was a broker who was engaged to sell the Rochester Rhinos. So whether they would get the numbers they were looking for, but the team was for sale, and they were trying to sell the team. And the person he was talking to was one of my partners in the Kings. And he said, well, you got to call David. I mean, he lives in Rochester. He owns part of a team now. And we talked for probably 20, 25 minutes on the ride home, got some information about the team. I signed a confidentiality agreement, got more information. And then the next few days in earnest, I was just diving into the numbers. And it literally was just somebody somewhere talking to a friend. And here we are.
Well, and it seems to me, at least from the outside, it has moved very quickly, best I can tell. Is that a fair characterization?
Yes.
We bought our house. It took longer to buy our house than this. I mean, it's incredible. I mean, it literally was a week that the league and I and Wendy got together and started talking about it. I mean, this whole thing was probably 3 weeks start to finish, from literally that email until we had the essence of a deal done with the league. And it really began in earnest when the league took the team back from the Clark family, because then it became public to everyone. So I really had probably a week head start on the rest of the population because this broker had reached out to me. And that week made all the difference in the world, because I didn't have a ramp-up period that others would have to dive into numbers. So that worked to our benefit for sure.
And there was definitely a sense of urgency with the season. The schedule had to come out, and it was being held up to see if there was going to be a team in Rochester or not. So unless we could move quickly, the team was going to fold up and it was going to go. It wasn't going to be here. So there wasn't time to take time.
That's a great point. This team literally was seconds away from moving. I mean, if there wasn't an ownership group in place pretty quickly, this team could never have stayed in Rochester. It would have. There are other cities that would take this franchise immediately.
And that, I think, is probably, I mean, I don't want to hyperbolize, but that's probably shocking to some people when you think about a number of factors here. First of all, this has been a franchise that, it's a cornerstone of the league it's in. It has been remarkably successful, 5 titles, coming off a title this year. And as I said, you go back to the 1990s, drawing remarkable crowds. So it is probably hard to believe for Rochesterians, even if they sort of vaguely follow the team, that it was this close. And this is why I think this conversation is so important this hour. We're sometimes hesitant to talk too much in the way of sports on the program. It's easy to alienate some listeners who don't care. But I do believe that if, whether you love soccer or you go to Salem Stadium for the Rhinos often or not, I do believe that the community cares about the fate of this franchise, the fate of the stadium, the fate of the neighborhood it's in. I think it's all sort of interwoven. And so David and Wendy, when you say we were that close to losing it, don't you think most people, I think, who haven't paid attention closely would be surprised to hear that?
I think they are very surprised. It's one of those situations when things are moving that quickly, the general public doesn't realize what the backstory is. And it was so close to leaving, and a couple obstacles came in our way that we think we've been able to resolve. But it was definitely really at the beyond the 2-yard line of leaving. And now we're hoping that the community will support us in helping it stay here and thrive here.
Obviously, the answer to this question of why is wrapped up in the financials probably more than anything. But why was it this close to leaving?
Well, the answer is that, as Wendy mentioned, the season has to come out. They've got to publish all the games so all the other 29 teams can get out there. And there really wasn't that much time. I mean, so you have a team that's taken back by the league. You've got a season that needs to go out so these other 28 teams could get their schedules together. You know, perhaps if it happened in November, you might have had some more time. But the reality is that the time just worked against everyone. And we're just fortunate that we were able to do it. And there is this moment where it looked like it was done. And Wendy was a little more there than I was. And you kind of feel the weight of the world. I mean, it's difficult to put into words how you feel when you realize that, and I learned this in Sacramento when the team was going to move to Seattle, and whether you're a Sacramento Kings fan or not, it's your community, and no one likes to have their team ripped out of their community. And you begin to take a step back and say, if I don't do something here, then, you know, it's a black eye for a community. No one wants to lose a franchise. I mean, when the franchise moves somewhere else, it's usually not because it's the greatest franchise around. It's usually because something worked against it. And you don't want that as someone that lives in this community.
Sure, and I think what I want to make sure I understand, though, is that a franchise isn't in position to move overnight. It's got to be the series of events that happen over a number of years where either attendance, revenue, et cetera, is problematic to the point where there's no fixing it. So is that fair to say, David and Wendy, that over a series of years here, in recent years, this franchise has suffered enough that it was on life support?
I don't know that I would call it life support. I mean, we're fortunate that we have an incredibly dedicated team of employees that are still working for the Rhinos. So I think what I would say to that is that the franchise, and I've said it when asked, this asset is not being bought because it's going to make money. It's projected to lose money. And my hope is, as Wendy said, the community gets around it and supports it, whether it's, you know, coming to a game or anything, just talking about it. But yes, the short answer to your question is that I wouldn't say that it was on life support. But what I would say is that you had a situation where you have a championship team that still can't get over a hurdle and be profitable and fill the seats and do all the things that are necessary.
Talking to David and Wendy Dworkin, our guests and the host, sort of an absentia this hour here. I want to let our listeners know you can still call the program and communicate, and we'll get to some of your feedback as well as we go throughout the hour. It's 844-295-TALK, toll-free, 844-295-8255 or 263-WXXI, 263-9994. David and Wendy have been able to fight through the snow and get into the studio when the host did not, and so I'm going to keep thanking them for doing that and honoring their commitment today. They are the new owners of the Rochester Rhinos, and you just heard them tell the story of how close this franchise was to leaving this city, which is amazing to some people. But here we are, and now they're trying to move forward. You, whether you know the Dworkins or not, you may know some of what they've been involved with. David's a partner in a firm that owns Panorama Plaza in Penfield, Culver Ridge Plaza as well. And their family history goes back, I don't want to misspeak here. David and Wendy, help me understand exactly here, because right now, as of 2013, you're part owners of the Sacramento Kings, but the Sacramento Kings, before they were in Kansas City, before they were in Cincinnati, they were the Rochester Royals from, I think, 45 to 57, is that right?
Correct.
Okay, and so what's the family connection here?
Well, my mother's maiden name is Harrison, and she is a cousin of the late Lester Harrison. He did not have any children. He was the owner and coach of the Rochester Royals, which before that was even, I believe, the Seagrams and the Ebers. And he and his brother, who was an attorney, ran the team. And my mother is one of the few surviving relatives of the Harrisons. It goes obviously a little bit further out once you get to me. When David and I were engaged, he met my cousin Lester, and they just hit it off immediately. They were close friends the rest of Lester's life. David and I helped accompany Lester to the Hall of Fame on multiple occasions and just take care of him in later years. And when Lester died, he left David all of his NBA memorabilia, his Hall of Fame ring, his jacket when he was enshrined in the Hall of Fame, And he just trusted David with all that collateral. He knew he would take care of it and make sure it was well taken care of.
And just to add, the cool part of the story is that our involvement in the Sacramento Kings puts our family back in our original franchise 60 years later. And there is no, to my knowledge, any owner in an NBA franchise that is in their original franchise. You had it with Mr. Wilson in Buffalo, with the Rooneys in Pittsburgh, but basketball does not have an original family, and it's just so exciting to be part of that original team. And I say it whenever asked, Sacramento has been extraordinary. They had a Rochester Royals retro night for us where the players wore Royals jerseys.
Wow.
They did a black and white Jumbotron that night. I've shipped out over the years tons of Lester's memorabilia for them to just display, and they've been great. I mean, they've really gone the extra mile to make the connectivity. I mean, if you go to Racha, if you go to Sacramento now, in the rafters is a retired jersey of some of the Rochester Royals players.
Wow. Well, and so now with your ownership stake in the Kings, you know, the NBA is not soccer, and it's a major league sport versus a minor, but I wonder if there are at least enough, similarities in terms of the market. Now, Sacramento is a city, is twice the size of Rochester, but Sacramento is not an obvious major league city. It's got one major league franchise, and it's probably the kind of professional ownership situation where you can't just put basketball on the court and know you're going to fill every seat and, you know, financially you'll move enough merchandise, but it has to be a fan experience outside of just hardcore sports fans. And I would think, maybe I'm wrong here, but are there parallels to the way that you will approach owning a franchise in Rochester that you can draw from Sacramento?
Well, there's definitely a lot that we've learned being involved in Sacramento that we can move over to Rochester. But having said that, the fan experience for the NBA is completely different than soccer.
Yeah.
You know, true soccer fans don't want quite the hullabaloo that goes along with an NBA game. I mean, you can't translate that. But what you can take is a good quality fan experience in terms of how are you going to cater to your fans once they are in, for our case, a stadium, not an arena like we have in SAC. So that goes to concessions, what you're offering, how you're offering it, how you're delivering the product to your clientele, certain things like that, how to take care of your fan, that does translate. But soccer is definitely a different experience, as it should be, than an NBA game.
Fair enough. Well, the Dworkins have already talked about improving the fan experience in Rochester. And listeners, I would love to hear from you this hour. When's the last time you went down to Salem Stadium or went to a Rhinos game? You know, maybe it was Frontier Field. What would it take to bring you back? What do you think of the recent experiences you might have had there? Call the program and tell us. It's 844-295-TALK. Toll-free, 844-295-8255. Or 263-WXXI, 263-9994. It's easier for you. You can email me. I have some emails that have come in already, which, again, in the second half hour, we will get to. Joe tells us on Twitter, the Rochester Rhinos are a cornerstone of Rochester. Proudly saw multiple games last season and watched them hoist that trophy. So Joe is happy to hear about the ownership and the stability that he hopes. But let me ask David and Wendy this. You go back to the late 90s, and again, they're playing in a AAA baseball stadium and regularly putting five figures, you know, 10,000 fans or more in that stadium. It was something that a lot of franchises were jealous of. And when I look back to those days compared to now, the two things that when I ask people, especially Rhinos fans, what's changed, the two things I hear most often are, number one, the economy, and number two, the stadium location. And I don't know how much you agree with that, but here's an email from a listener named Jody. She said, used to take my kids down to the games, never felt entirely comfortable, and always felt like the politicians steered that stadium into a place it naturally shouldn't have gone. Well, there's no changing that now, but I wonder, let's start there. David and Wendy, was it a mistake to put that stadium where they put it?
I can't say if it was or wasn't a mistake. I mean, some could make an argument that there are better places for a stadium, but if you look at a lot of the stadiums across the country, some of those stadiums are in areas that are in many ways either similar or worse, depending on what your definition of worse may be. The way I kind of look at it is that Frontier Field and the stadium are a block and a half apart. And it's always been something challenging for me to understand how that extra distance is, to some people, a different zip code. I think one of the things that we're working on is to come up with a way to make people feel that they can be safe and comfortable in the stadium. And part of that goes to, I mean, if you ask someone how to get to Frontier Field, they'll tell you take the 490, take the inner loop. If you ask them how to get to the soccer stadium, you find that's not as easy an answer, even though they're a block and a half apart. So I think we have a pretty heavy lift here, and we know this is a big issue for, I mean, I get emails from people all the time saying that I used to go when it was in Frontier Field, but I don't go anymore just because I don't feel safe, I don't feel comfortable. And, you know, we've got to work on that. And, you know, that's something that we work on with the city, we work on with the police department. And again, whether it's real or not real, it exists in people's minds, and we've got to figure ways to make them feel comfortable because it's a great experience. I mean, soccer's a great sport. It's, you know, it's quick, it's action all the time, but that's something that we have to do. And that is toward the top of the list of what people have concerns about.
I know in the short term, what we'll be doing is adding to signage. And obviously, you have to go through a process with the DOT to increase signage. So in the short term, we'll have extra personnel, an expanded perimeter, and probably some temporary signage to help direct people. So there's a short-term solution for season one. And then there's that continuing working on the process for permanent solutions for year two and beyond.
Let's get to the phones. We've got a couple of people waiting, and I want to start with Bruce in Pittsburgh because he has a specific question about, or at least an answer to the question of why some people are not going the way they used to go to Rhino's games and what might change that. So let's go to Bruce in Pittsburgh. Hi, Bruce.
Hi, can you hear me okay?
Yeah, go ahead.
All right. Yeah, I used to go probably 5-6 times a season without even batting an eye, sometimes more than that, when it was at Frontier Field. There's really good parking there. It's very easy to walk to the stadium. I don't know why in the world anybody was dumb enough to put the stadium where it is, but I'm in real estate, and from my point of view, it's an appreciated stadium that has no value whatsoever. If I were looking to make the Rhinos popular again, I'd be looking for a spot out there in Henrietta about where 390 and 590 come together, build myself a new stadium, and everybody from Syracuse, Buffalo, and Rochester and Corning can get there, and you'll fill the seats every day. I don't think it has anything to do with the team. I think it has everything to do with the location of a terrible stadium. It's maybe perfect as far as soccer is concerned from a stadium point of view. It's just like building a house in the wrong location. I sell real estate. You can have a beautiful house in a certain location. It has absolutely no resale value. You can build the same house in another location, and it gains value every year. This stadium should be just basically thrown out as far as depreciation. Accept it, understand it, and go forward.
Okay, well, Bruce, thanks for the phone call. And, you know, you're talking to people who know a lot about real estate, and so there's a couple of things I want to have them address them. First of all, David and Wendy Dworkin, I assume the location is a location. Is there any thought to moving the location where the team plays in any way in the near future or the long-term future?
There's not. We're making a commitment to the city of Rochester. We're signing a lease. We've got a 10-year franchise agreement, and we're committed to keeping the stadium and the team where it's located. I mean, that's our plan. And the city understands what our concerns and our issues are, and they understand that they need to deal with those issues with us. And the city has committed to us that they're going to do that. So I have to take the city at their word, and, you know, they realize, I mean, we've had conversations, they realize what we're hearing as well. So I have to be a good partner with the city of Rochester and take them at their word that they're going to help us to make that area feel what it should. Again, a block and a half from Frontier Field, but worlds apart. And that's the commitment the city has given Wendy and I. And I'll say it publicly, they've said it. So I'm hoping that they're going to do it, and I have no reason to think they're not. With respect to parking, we are working on some additional lots that were not available to the prior owners that the city has. And we're working through that with the city as well to increase the amount of available parking in and around the stadium.
Now, when it comes to the city's commitment there, David, have they been specific? I mean, you say that the city is going to follow through. They told you they will, to the point where you're comfortable sharing that with our audience. But specifically, you know, can you help us see what that might mean?
There's two answers. So the first part of the answer is our early meetings have been that the city of Rochester and RPD are going to work to, whether it's expanding the perimeter, doing things to make everyone feel more safe and secure. We have meetings scheduled with RPD to go through our concerns and other people's concerns relative to that. I mean, I've received emails from people that have given me some experience they've had, not recently, but years and years ago. One of the other things that's changed in the area has been the construction of a lot of the Habitat for Humanity houses. And what was historically more transient people in the neighborhood have now become homeowners through Habitat, which has certainly helped a great deal. But we have meetings set up with the city of Rochester to specifically talk about our concerns, which have already been made aware to them, but also to hear from the city of Rochester what their plan is relative to the area in and around the stadium. And they've committed to have those meetings with us, and we've got our first one set up for later this week.
Okay, so that's outside the stadium and then that area. Now, inside the stadium, I've been reading about changes that you both have planned, and I don't know what the timeline is. I hear a new field. I hear certain facility upgrades. Can you take us through some of that?
Sure. The field and the scoreboard will be this season. We will also have improved concessions in all areas of the stadium. So not only the suite level, but in the general, in the bowl area, that will be improved. There'll be further improvements after year one. We have to, quite frankly, put in improvements in order to improve the food service because they are not currently there. And it's a question of how much can we get built, how much can we get done season one. And then season two, we'll obviously during the off season have the opportunity to see what worked, what didn't work, and what other structural improvements we need to make in order to improve that experience. We're also looking at how to improve the experience for millennials, be that communication abilities within the stadium and some possibility of live music before the games.
Okay, well, you know, I think I heard David say in a separate interview this past weekend that pizza's pizza. Everybody loves pizza. That's fine. But otherwise, the food has got to get way better. Yes?
Super big, huge, enormous yes.
It's not just what's offered. It's how it's offered. It's how you actually literally deliver that product to the fans, wherever they are within that stadium. It's not just what's being served to them. It's how it's being served.
Well, and it's healthy options. It's gluten-free options. I mean, there are so many different touches that we need to do. And you know, our very first interview, when we first were announced, we both said to everyone, please understand that we have great plans and great goals here, but we've got 60 to 70 days before this season starts. And if we get a new field, if we fix the scoreboard, and if we enhance some of the interior parts of the stadium, consider that a very enormous plus for this year. Don't expect everything to happen in 1 year. I mean, we have to field a team. I only have 10 players under contract right now, which is not uncommon. But Coach Lee and I have met, you know, pretty much almost every day the last couple weeks talking about our players. We had a combine a couple weeks ago. So we've got to pick the things that are most important. Playing on a good field, getting the U.S. national team back at some point, that's important. The scoreboard was an embarrassment. You can't field what basically, as you said, Evan, is one of the most storied franchises in soccer outside of MLS. You have to have a real scoreboard. So if people understand that this year is going to be better, next year is going to be even better than this year.
And I don't know if people realize, by improving even just the turf and the scoreboard this year and some signage, now that stadium is able to be leased out to other people that need a stadium for events, be it sporting or a concert or things like that. Now you've really helped make the stadium viable and sustainable. So some people are like, scoreboard and turf, that's it. But that is really imperative in order to get other sporting events in the venue.
Well, just think what that does for the Section 5 playoffs that are there. I mean, all those kids that are going to be playing in the playoffs for Section 5 are now going to have, you know, what, without, by everyone's account, is going to be the nicest stadium as far as the turf goes in the United States. There will not be, as I've been told, a better turf surface anywhere in the United States.
Wow.
That's a big deal.
Before I get to a break, and I know Aaron's been waiting on the phone, Jeff in Caledonia wants to weigh in, and I promise we're getting you in just 1 second. One more quick question before we go to break with David and Wendy Dworkin, the new owners of the Rochester Rhinos. So the fans have those things to look forward to in the short term. That's this season. You've got more planned for the long term. When it comes to that food experience, David, Wendy, what's one example of a place that you go to, whether it's here in Rochester or in a major league city, where you go, wow, that is great food. People would come maybe just for the food at a place like this.
I mean, I can, yeah. Sacramento Kings.
Does a good job.
I mean,
that's okay. You can say Sacramento.
Yeah, I mean, Sacramento, and that doesn't count what we're doing in the new arena that we're building now. But in the old arena, they have so many options. They do a lot of farm to table. They try to get local suppliers and local companies to come in. They switch it up a little bit. There's just, I mean, I've been to so many stadiums where it's sometimes about options. Just like there are people that go to a Red Wings game or a Rhinos game or any other sport where someone is dragged along and they're not really interested in the sport, but their spouse or father or son or someone says we're going. There are people that like different types of food. And there's someone in my office that's gluten-free. And you got to have choices for that. And so I think that the very short answer to what you said is Sacramento does it very well. They understand the dynamics of serving a mass population that has a mass of different choices. And you just want to be able to have those choices. And we could have rotating choices. I mean, one of the things that I've talked about, and I'm not sure yet if it's feasible, is, for example, specials. When my wife and I both went to Syracuse and we have a suite at the Dome, in the old days, when you're in your late 40s, old days is kind of an interesting term. But in the old days, they used to have a special for the suites where when we played Louisville, it was bourbon chicken. When we played Boston College, it was New England clam chowder. Just something to change it up that had some relationship to the team that you were playing. It's just kind of a neat thing to try. So those are some things that we look at as we try to evolve the food. And it's not that the food, what we have, isn't great. It's that there needs to be other choices. There needs to be healthy choices. There needs to be salads and things like that for people. And that's, my wife is clearly a far bigger proponent of the healthier choices. And I'm a proponent because I've been told it's a good idea. It's true. But yes, I think SAC is probably the best choice only because we go out there so frequently.
And to mix it up, you know, and to get around some of the shortfalls and of, you know, not having enough ANSEL systems in the stadium right now or, you know, a true commissary, we're looking at rotating some food trucks in there to get some variety and keep some local options and showcase what Rochester does best. So, again, it's going to vary from year one to year two, but we're looking at all of our choices to make it a good experience.
Well, and the last thing I'll say is that we're taking all of the suggestions seriously. I mean, I apologize. There's been a lot of emails I haven't responded to, and I'm doing my best. I started out with like 4 Twitter followers before this started, and I'm at like 70-something now. And I just passed my wife. I was very proud of myself. But, and I've been on Twitter only because someone told me I had to years and years ago. But what I would say is that the other part of that is that, you know, people have given us suggestions like, what about a beer garden? You know, what about that fireplace that exists and there's nothing around it? You know, what if we had a bar there where people could have, whether it's beer or spirits? And, you know, what about bringing some of the live music back and come in earlier? I just saw something that someone sent me an email about, something they did in Florida at the Panthers, where they had this inflatable sort of, basically looked like a hockey rink, and the kids could play around. It was kind of like just a perimeter of puffed up air. So we're trying to figure out a lot of those things that people want to see, and it's going to be trial and error. You know, we may try something and it may not hit, and then we may try something that people say, this is great, I love this idea. You know, the bounce house is such a great idea. So I think that's something that we continue to do as we evolve, is to come up with what ideas people want. And our hope and expectation is that we're going to hear it, that we're going to hear people, whether it's on some social network, but tell us, you know, we love the idea of you having this thing or the specials or the idea of a beer garden. Those are things I think that are very important for us to understand, because what we like may not be what the bulk fan wants. And the last thing I'll say is that we have to balance between the soccer purists that, you know, don't want certain things and the people that want an experience. And somewhere in between that is what we're hoping to get to.
Talking to David and Wendy Dworkin, the new owners of the Rochester Rhinos. After this short break, back to your phone calls. We've had a lot of community feedback for these new owners as they try to, I don't say revive, the franchise just won a title last year, but stabilize it financially to grow the audience, to put more people back at the stands than it was in the late 90s. The conversation continues after this short break on Connections.
Coming up in our second hour, we look at grassroots efforts to fight poverty in Rochester. These are genuine grassroots efforts coming directly from local residents who saw problems that they could fix. Who are they? Find out next hour on Connections. Welcome back to Connections. We are talking with David and Wendy Dworkin, the new owners of the Rochester Rhinos. And Evan Dawson is hosting the show from home today, so I will toss it back to him.
Thank you, Megan Mack, producer who's in studio with David and Wendy. I was snowed in at home and finally gave up, though I have to say I'm feeling really, really good about the workout I got in shoveling this morning, all for naught. So I'm hosting from the home office, and David and Wendy are here, and I want to get back to the phones. Joe on Twitter says, chances of becoming an MLS team? Well, I think Aaron has a similar comment about team support. He's been waiting, and so let's turn to Aaron now. Go ahead.
Hi, everybody. From a fan that's been watching the team, you know, from Favre, you know, Stadium over at U of R to, you know, Frontier Field, I really think the biggest problem we have is the fact that we do not have a relevant team, and we've kept going backwards. We were beating MLS teams. You've got people that own pizza shops in Rochester that were former, you know, Italian national team players. I went and saw them play in Carlos Valderrama, Colombia's famous center midfielder. You know, 10,000-plus people were there. And the reality is it's not because of the location of the stadium. I've been to stadiums in Europe that are in much shadier, quote-unquote, neighborhoods, and yet they still pack them. And if you look at the size of the stadium, we are larger than many of the premiership teams, not in necessarily England, but in Scotland and in Wales and some major league markets. So the stadium, I think, is excellent. I agree with what you're doing. That neighborhood's fine. It's totally safe. Just people will go to the game. The reality is it's the quality. And what really frustrates me as a fan and a Rochesterian, born and raised, is the fact that an hour down the street, there are two major league franchises that are supported by us, and yet we're too scared to get some more money, if we have to borrow some money from Pagula or wherever we got to get it from, to go MLS. And we should have been an MLS team. You know, to watch Portland Timbers become an MLS team, to watch, you know, Montreal become an MLS team, and yet we dominated those teams, and yet here we are in the third division. Very frustrating.
Well, the good news, number one, the good news is that we're going to be Division II next year.
Excellent.
So that's, we are moving up, and the USL has committed. We've made our applications, and we're going through a process, and there's no reason to believe that we're not going to be Division II.
That's outstanding.
We do have a relationship with the New England Revolution, which has existed for some time, and my wife and I have been corresponding back and forth with them about that relationship, which has been great, not for us as well for us, but other teams. So that, I guess those are two parts. As far as MLS in general.
I don't want to cut you off, but I think that's the thing is I'm so tired of, and I'm not alone in this. You probably have 100,000 people in Rochester that feel the same. We're tired of being the minor league team, you know, like with the Amherst and the Sabres. Listen, what you're doing is awesome, and we are so happy and thankful that real owners came in and are going to do something with us, you know, since Cotamini's and them have left. I think it's awesome, but please, in the back of your mind, know that we want to be a major league team. And I'm not alone in this. I'm saying this to
Aaron,
everybody I talk to.
Aaron, I can tell you, I have a unique perspective because the Sacramento Republic is on the verge of becoming, as they say, MLS ready. And I've watched the Republic go from basically a USL team to now we're building a stadium in downtown Sacramento. And the Kings are equity partners in the Sacramento Republic. So I've watched what's happening there. And I think to your point about MLS relative to Rochester, it would be incredible for Rochester to have an MLS team. I mean, the stadium was built for a second addition, if you will, on the other side. And the only way, and I've talked to people about MLS. I mean, I've talked to the USL. I've talked to people in Sacramento. I've got great relationships with a lot of the people out there. And I've asked them, you know, what does it take? You know, what does it really take to be an MLS team? And take the franchise fee and all those things aside. You need to be able to prove that you can fill a stadium game in and game out, that you are, as you said in earlier, that you're relevant. And until you're, now we can be relevant, we can be champions, we can be relevant, but if you want to take that big step and become an MLS team, in order to do that, you've got to pack the stadium, and you got to pack it all the time. And I can tell you that, and I'll speak for Wendy as well, there's no doubt in our mind that if we could ever be MLS ready, we'd love that. Who wouldn't want to have an MLS team in Rochester? I mean, it's fantastic to have a professional team. We lost the Royals. So I guess I would close and say to you that there'd be nothing I can think of that'd be more exciting than to be an MLS team. But the heavy lifting requires the community to get behind the team all the time.
And it's not just being MLS ready on the field. The current state of the team, the business operations are not MLS ready. We have to stabilize it as a business, and that includes selling out that stadium. That has to happen, and it has to be rock solid before you take that next step to MLS. So you have to be MLS ready on a field, and you have to be MLS ready in your business practices, and it's just not there yet.
David and Wendy, remind our audience, what is the capacity at Salem's?
It's about 13,800.
Yeah, and so, yeah. I certainly share Aaron's enthusiasm for the possibility. By the way, I'm a big fan of promotion and relegation, and I wish American soccer would go in that direction, but I understand that's probably not going to happen. That being said, I share Aaron's enthusiasm for you know, his vision for what, you know, Rochester as a major league city would be great. Just keep in mind, in MLS, the highest average attendance last year was Seattle Sounders, 44,247 average attendance. Orlando, 32,000 was in second. And then you had New York at 29, Toronto 23, and there isn't a city in MLS as small as Rochester as a city. Now again, you can expand in the metro area, but I think what David and Wendy are saying, Aaron, is makes a lot of sense. That at the very least, if we're going to have the smallest stadium in MLS, what this community has to do is earn it, earn that consideration, and that means going out there. And not going out there only on special occasions, et cetera. It means selling out. It means getting back to where it was and then some in the late 90s. And that's partially why they're here. They're telling the community their plans to achieve that. But I also think it's important to ask David and Wendy this question. I heard you guys mentioning this weekend that you want the experience to be stitched into the community much better than it currently is. And what I think you meant by that is right now in recent years, people, if they go to the Rhinos game, they go down to the Rhinos game, they drive to the stadium, they go to the stadium, they get in their car, and they leave. There isn't a lot of connectivity to local bars, restaurants, establishments that sort of encourage this, I hate to use the word synergy, but synergy. I mean, David, did I hear you say when the nearest bar doesn't even have a soccer ball in it or, you know, that kind of a thing where there's got to be more of a cohesion, right?
First of all, yes is the answer. The closest establishment certainly doesn't have a soccer ball in it. And I apologize to all the listeners to keep going back to Sacramento, but one of the great things about being involved in Sacramento is that I have a real life experience to fall back on. And what I have found is that the synergies of having a bar, having places for people to go beforehand, those are things that are absolutely on our list to do. But the problem is when you only get 2,000, 3,000, 4,000 fans in a game, the economies of scale are not there. And then what happens in the off season when the stadium really isn't open in the winter? What does that bar do? Is it a bar that just you know, Wendy and I are putting together and it's kind of a seasonal establishment, or are people going to go down there and frequent it in the off season? And that's one of the things that we need to get our arms wrapped around. But you're right. I mean, what you want to avoid in all situations is an oasis where you have a stadium and the stadium might as well just be in the air. You drive in, you drive out, and you go. I mean, in the old days, people used to go to Frontier Field, and they had Empire Brewing Company across the street. And, you know, you could see people there that were in jackets and ties or jeans or shorts, and they all mingled together and had a wonderful time. And, you know, that's something, you know, maybe it's something in between the two places where you can go to either or. So I think the answer to that question simply is it'd be great if we can pull it off. But again, the denominator always remains you got to fill the stadium.
Sure. David and Wendy Dworkin for a few more minutes with us, the new owners of the Rochester Rhinos. And you're getting a sense for how ambitious they are on very short notice. If you missed it earlier in the conversation, they are part owners of the Sacramento Kings, which have roots in Rochester as the old Rochester Royals. But David and Wendy are local. And it wasn't until December 20th that they essentially got an email saying, think about the Rochester and the soccer team here, which was on the verge of leaving town. Well, they've stepped in less than 2 months, and here they are. And the concern, I guess, I have as a soccer fan is that, David and Wendy, if this doesn't work with you guys, my concern is it's not going to work anymore in this town. And I don't want to be sort of, you know, fatalistic about it, but if you're not going to do this, I don't know who is, given your approach, given how local you are, given your track record. And I guess what I want to see is if the community does step up the way you say, which is our establishment's going to kind of work together with you, our fans going to come out in higher numbers if you invest in them. So it's kind of a community test in the next year, two, three, I think, to see if this is going to be viable again. Do you agree?
I hate to say it, I do. I mean, as you said it and I thought about it, it's not that we're the greatest sports owners on the planet, because we're not. We have the benefit of experience. We've reached out to other USL owners, Oklahoma, Sacramento, and some other, and asked them for some assistance, some guidance, some things that have worked in their communities that we're hoping to implement. But I do think it's reasonable to say that we're the third owner of this team. One, two, mm-hmm. three. We're the third owner of this team. You know, third time's a charm, hopefully. But, Evan, I think you bring up a good point. You know, if we can't make it happen, then I'm not so sure that I think it becomes real problematic.
I agree. I think it's essential that the individual fans support us and that the business community support us, especially in the early years. This isn't going to work, and jobs will be lost, which will be terrible, if the business community doesn't support us just like the individual fan.
I've got to get it real tight here. Jeff in Caledonia, let's go to Jeff, and let's try to keep it 30 seconds or less because we're running short on time. Go ahead, Jeff.
Hi, David and Wendy. I'm from Caledonia, but I only sleep here. I seem to spend most of my time on the soccer field, and I've been a referee for 35 years, and I've been on the field with many of the people who have been Rhinos back when they were playing youth soccer. So I have a long time kind of perspective on this whole thing, and but this isn't about me. What all that I really wanted to stay in the line for was to get an email address where I could send you a note, because I would like to, if it happens, when it happens, I would like to be part of a focus group type of gathering that might be pulled together to have soccer people and local citizens talk about these problems in depth and try to actively come up with some short-term and long-term solutions.
Sure, and Jeff, let me jump in, and thanks for the phone call. How can they best communicate with the franchise? Feedback, fan groups, et cetera. David and Wendy?
I mean, certainly you can. I mean, there's emails. There's a whole host of different ways to get a hold of us. I mean, I have no problem giving out my email address. Mm-hmm. It's public. You know, my email address is david@LLDLarryLarryDavidEnterprises.com. And my wife's is the same thing with Wendy in front of it. And if all goes well in a couple days, I'll have my wife and I both have Rhino's email addresses. But I haven't gotten the confirmation that it's live yet. So for now, that email address is just fine to use. And again, I am reasonably good with emails. Sometimes it takes me a while to respond. So to anyone that emails me, don't interpret my lack of responding to anything other than I'm getting there. As I've said before, of late, my wife and I have two full-time jobs right now, and we've got to make sure that we do well on both of our businesses. And We're down to 60-something days. The last week of April is our first game. So, you know, Jeff, certainly feel free to reach out, and I'll certainly do my best to communicate back, and hopefully we can find a way to get that together.
David and Wendy came in on a day where I couldn't even get to the studio because of snow, and so I'm frankly a little embarrassed about that, David and Wendy, but I want to thank you.
Thank you for having us.
And I know our community appreciates it, and this is going to be very interesting. I hope you come back and keep the conversation going, and good luck to you.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Stay warm.
David and Wendy Dworkin we're going to drive. Owners of the Rochester Rhinos, thanks for listening this hour. We're going to get a short break in, and Megan Mack, producer, is ready to step in. And thanks for hanging in there with the host in the home office on this snowy Tuesday. More Connections next.